This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Secretary Clinton, yes, is that okay? Good. I want you to be very happy. She doesn't have the look. She doesn't have the stamina.
As soon as he travels to 112 countries and negotiates a peace deal, a ceasefire, he can talk to me about stamina.
NAFTA is the worst trade deal maybe ever signed anywhere, but certainly ever signed in this country. And now you want to approve Trans-Pacific Partnership.
First, we have to build an economy that works for everyone, not just those at the top.
Under my plan, I'll be reducing taxes tremendously. It's going to be a beautiful thing to watch.
The kind of plan that Donald has put forth would be trickle-down economics all over again. I call it trumped-up trickle-down. He has really started his political activity based on this racist lie that our first black president was not an American citizen.
I think I did a good job.
Donald supported the invasion of Iraq.
Wrong.
That is absolutely
wrong.
Proved over and over again.
Wrong.
He actually had, or maybe he doesn't want the American people, all of you watching tonight, to know that he's paid nothing in federal taxes because there's something he's hiding.
Makes you proud to be an American, doesn't it? Our democracy is strong. Our cable system works. And last night, Donald Trump, he had her. He had her in the first few minutes on a number of things. And then bad Donald slipped in. Or I like to call him real Donald. What's the thing with the hard ends with him? China. You know what I mean?
Stamina.
Yeah. Stamina. Minor point, just bugs me. Rick Pearson joins us now. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good morning.
How do you feel about China?
Well, you know, I saw two tweets that I thought summed up everything. One, and I can't remember who the first one was, but said Donald Trump's motto ought to be, "Let's make America great again. I own property there."
Not mine, but I like it.
And Stephen King, the horror author,
yeah,
this morning tweeted out that one candidate was prepared for a debate. The other candidate was prepared to appear on Sean Hannity's show.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, that's another clueless reference. The fact that he kept bringing up Hannity with the notion that Hannity is somehow a nationally recognized journalistic source that everybody goes to. It's more the cluelessness.
Right.
What'd you say, Ben?
No, Trump won the Alabama primary last night. Hands down. He will kill her in Alabama.
Well, Rick, I'm telling you, I don't believe she won it outright as much as he lost it outright.
Well, damn tired.
I agree with you about how I thought he started out okay. But, yeah, as the debate went on, it was obvious that she was getting under his skin, and like you said, we started seeing the true Donald and the interruptive Donald, the dismissive Donald. I gave him credit for not coming out of the blocks and referring to her as Secretary Clinton instead of crooked, lying Hillary.
Yeah, and he wanted credit for not bringing up the infidelities of Bill Clinton. You don't get credit for not being a jackass. I don't know what world he's living in.
Well, you don't get credit for omission too. And you know, we barely touched the issue of the Clinton emails that came up and went away. Benghazi didn't come up.
Deplorables didn't come up, and deplorables was one of her worst moments.
Correct. And someone else noted this. You know, what we kind of saw was low energy Donald last night too. And while, you know, again, I make the point about him interrupting her and being dismissive to her, and how basically he tries to come off, as he always does, as the smartest guy in the room. And trust me, but he talks about problems. She talked about solutions.
It's always nice to hear somebody from Park Avenue talking about the Chicago gang problem, too.
Well, the two of them.
The two of them. It's the Hamptons of Park Avenue telling us what's wrong in Chicago.
Yeah. And by the way, she grew up here, and he's got a building here. Okay.
She grew up in Park Ridge. It's not exactly Inglewood.
No, but neither, you know, but you and I don't live in Inglewood either. It doesn't mean we can't talk about it if you actually do the homework.
But actually not talk about it and have your facts wrong and not really have any idea what's going on.
As soon as they started talking about Chicago, I was going, just please shut up. Just shut up. Just shut up. And they didn't. What did you think was his best moment, Rick? Anything jump out?
Two things. One, I thought early on when he talked about the issue of experience and NATO, you know, and you've been around 25, 30 years, that kind of reinforcing that issue of, you know, you're the status quo politician and I'm the outsider. And NATO, I think, actually is a very good argument for the core constituency that he's trying to get to, those people who are affected by unemployment, lack of or underemployment because of globalization. I think, you know, those were two good moments that he had.
I thought her best moment of the night, because it answered the question about her health and her experience, was when she answered his stamina insult with, when you've done 120 countries and sat in Congress for 11 hours, then you can talk to me about stamina.
But he didn't answer the question, because the original question was, you said that she doesn't look like a president.
Right.
What does that mean?
Right.
And of course, he tried to shift quickly into the stamina health issue.
The next debate is the vice presidential debate. I would make the argument that it is vitally important because these two are both, 70 and 68. He's eating KFC on the plane. She just got off of pneumonia. There's no guarantee they're around in 4 years. So are we going to be shifting our interest there, or is it still all going to be about these two?
I think it's still going to be about these two, but it will be interesting to see, in the case of Mike Pence being Trump's running mate, so seeing if there's some kind of distance that Pence tries to draw between some of the more outlandish positions that Donald Trump has taken. You're dealing with, both with Pence and with Kane, you're dealing with, you know, two experienced politicians, two guys familiar with Congress. I think the tenor of the debate will be different, but I that's the key I would look for, is to see where Pence actually may differ with his presidential running mate.
What are you writing about today?
Well, today, obviously, some of the follow-up from the debate, including the whole issue of, what Donald Trump said about Chicago.
It's Rick Pearson, finest political writer in America. He's, of course, host of the Sunday Spin, which I assume you'll be on next Sunday.
Absolutely. And, of course, we'll be talking a lot about this.
All right, but thank you. And at Rap30 on Twitter and social media. Jason DeSanto teaches people how to debate, breaks down debate, understands speech, speaks English. It's my second language. You'll be here in a second as well with Pat Brady. We'll continue to talk about this on 720 WGN. And Eric Edelstein will join us in just a second as well. He is currently in North Carolina. Apparently, he doesn't know there's no border guards.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I will release my tax returns against my lawyer's wishes. When she releases her 33,000 emails that have been deleted, as soon as she releases them, I will release my tax returns. And that's against my lawyers. They say, don't do it. I will tell you this. No, in fact, watching shows, reading the papers, almost every lawyer says, you don't release your returns until the audit's complete. When the audit's complete, I'll do it. But I would go against them if she releases her
emails. So it's negotiable?
It's not negotiable, no.
Got to a point last night where, you know, when you're driving on a winter road and the car starts to fishtail, I felt like Trump's answers. Uh-oh, we're going to spin! Jason DeSantos here, senior lecturer from Northwestern University, which means he won't talk to anyone who's not a senior. And nice to see you. How are you?
Hi, Steve. Great to see you, too.
What'd you think?
The Thrilla in Hofstra.
She did do a little rope-a-dope. She did do a little sit back and let him make a fool out of himself.
That was the most masterful part of her performance, actually.
What she didn't say.
Her cutaways. I've always thought Al Gore lost the presidency because of his facial expressions in his debate.
Remember, this is my
Bush.
Al Gore impression.
That was the lockbox, right?
The lockbox. But then
the size.
And yeah. I think she may have won it last night with hers. She needed to connect with people, and she did it a little bit with the substance of her answers, talking more about the people who've been stiffed by Trump, and a lot of them are workers, and talking about her father and really speaking to middle-class economic anxiety. But I thought the heavy-duty work she did in connecting was simply in letting him hang himself while she looked on bemusedly.
Yeah, well, that was the deal, right? Her face kind of told the story that everybody was feeling. And the thing is, in the first half, when her answers were too long and too Hillary, he could have let her continue to drone on, but he was so in his own head. Once we hit the 45-minute mark, he got into tired, cranky Donnie, and he lost it.
Well, it's true, but he was driving his message for the first 25 minutes of the debate.
And her responses were too long.
Outsider, economy, trade.
You know, I would never disagree with someone from Northwestern. I was going to go there.
Did you know he's
I couldn't get in.
Listen, before you say this, he's a senior lecturer.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
Okay,
far.
Pat, but, come at me.
No, the connecting thing, I understand what you're saying, because she was talking about middle class issues and job issues and things that are important. But she needs to connect with some Republicans and people that are undecided. And I'm not sure if she got that across the line. I agree with everything you said about Trump blowing it and her performance being very good. But who is she trying to connect? If she wants to connect with her base, she's already there. But I don't think she's going to sway any Republicans.
No. We're talking about Rust Belt voters, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan.
Oh, I think she moved the needle on some moderates.
I don't think those folks.
If there are some people last night that are waiting to decide and weren't connected until last night, and I shouldn't say she moved the needle. The experience moved the needle because he crashed and burned.
That's my point. I'm not sure if she moved the needle. I think it was more.
Well, I think she'll take the win. Eric Edelstein, live from North Carolina. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
What did you think? And by the way, I'm assuming you watched.
Wait, was that last night?
No, yeah, I did.
You know, I agree with what the guys are saying. I had this image, guys, as the debate wore down, my mind went to what the Saturday Night Live skit would be, and I kept seeing cutbacks to the guy, whoever's playing Trump, being more and more disheveled, hair more and more out of place, sweating, tie loose. I mean, he just kind of came unraveled there in that last half hour.
I thought he was going to bite the water glass.
He turned into the Hulk. He did. He turned into the Hulk.
It was a spectacle. I mean, obviously I'm a partisan, and I think you can critique what Hillary did. But I think fundamentally, and you know, Jason can attest to this, you had one candidate who had a plan and followed it, and then the other one who was led around by the nose, took every bait that was dangled in front of him, and, you know, just basically impaled himself.
And you and Pat can speak to this. Ego of politicians has to be one of the most dangerous things you could deal with, because you only have to go back to 2012 to see how dangerous ego is when the president didn't think it was important to prepare against Mitt Romney and slept through the first debate and almost cost him the election. Trump's ego apparently so big, he continues to not listen to his own people, and he wasn't ready last night. And I refuse to buy into this notion that his ADD is so severe he can't focus enough to prep. He's just not doing the work.
You know, we talk about this a lot with candidates when, you know, we're practicing and working on questions and working on media training. And, you know, a lot of times people get frustrated and they say, you know, why do I have to do this? And you remind them, the people who are the best at anything, whether you're playing the violin or you're giving speeches or you're a dentist or you're a radio host, you practice. And the fact of the matter is that that's an audition to be president of the United States. And I thought Hillary had a great line. It might have seemed prophecy, but the notion that you prepare to be president of the United States, and I think it's pretty clear this guy, I think David Brooks or someone wrote a few months ago that most Americans spend more time preparing to buy a sofa than this guy would to be president of the United States.
The question of what happens from here is a real one, and I am reluctant to dismiss Trump because he's Glenn Close from Fatal Attraction. Every time you think that she drowned in the tub, she sits up with a knife again. So are you ready to write him off, or do we need to wait?
Someone had a great comment. They said, here's the 2016 election. Clinton stomps Trump in first debate. Trump gets a bounce. You know, who the hell knows what's going to happen?
Who the hell knows?
What Trump would say. But look, he still has, you know, despite all the, I think, kind of hyperventilating over some of these national polls, he's got a fundamental math problem in these battleground states. The map is very, very tough for him. And, you know, at this point, these are tactical nights, huge tactical nights. And I don't, while Pat's probably right, I'm not sure Hillary necessarily moved the needle with a ton of folks. I think she was presidential, and I don't think Trump did anything to change the trajectory of the race. In fact, I think he might have gone backwards.
Are you in Charlotte?
I am in Raleigh.
You're in Raleigh. Okay. Are you coming back, or did you move?
No. I'll be back tonight. You going to pick me up at the airport, guys?
I actually will be in Raleigh later today, as a matter of fact. Maybe I'll see you. All right, hold the line, if you would, please. That's the great Eric Adelstein. And just quickly from YouTube before we jump to the big story, over or not over?
Not over.
But closer.
No, you said it was like Glenn Close, right?
Yeah.
In that movie.
Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, Fatal Attraction. Who's the bunny? The American people are the bunny.
They've boiled us. And over or not over?
Not over, but he took, a small or maybe big step backwards because he failed the commander-in-chief test. And his high watermark, we talked about it before the debate last night, that the high watermark for him might have been 30 seconds before this debate started because there were some good polls, but I'm not sure what he did to help himself and probably a little bit backwards.
Big story next and more from these guys on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
You take a look at her website. She's going to raise taxes $1.3 trillion.
Mr. Trump, I'm
and look at her website. You know what? It's no different than this. She's telling us how to fight ISIS. Just go to her website. She tells you how to fight ISIS on her website. I don't think General Douglas MacArthur would like that
too much. The next segment, we're continuing
well,
the subject
of... Well, at least I have a plan to fight ISIS.
Prosperity.
No, you're telling the enemy everything you want to do.
No, we're not.
See, you're telling the enemy everything you want to do. No wonder you've been fighting. No wonder you've been fighting ISIS your entire adult life.
Okay, a couple of points. ISIS started, like if there was a founded in sign outside of ISIS headquarters, you're looking at what, 2005, 2006? You know, they franchised after that, but I certainly wouldn't say it's Hillary's entire adult life. And is there anything that ages a girl faster than referencing General Douglas MacArthur over and over again? Ay, ay, ay. Donald Trump, Pat Brady, if you are managing his campaign, what are you saying to the public and what are you saying behind closed doors?
I think...
if you're Kellyanne Conway, and by the way, you'd look great in that dress, what would you say?
She's done a fine job. I'd put her out more, but I think it's too far along for him to really change what he's doing. He needs to keep what he's doing and just try to convince that 7 or 8% he needs. But he's really, right now, is kind of boxed in. And last night, like I was joking before, he can win the Alabama primary, but the thing that would be most disturbing to me if I were on the Trump campaign, which obviously I'm not, is his whole premise has been this is a different kind of campaign. I'm an outsider. I'm going to do big rallies. I'm not going to do a ground game. I'm not going to do TV. I'm not going to raise a ton of money. I'm going to win. Well, and part of that is I'm not going to prepare for a debate. Well, it doesn't work out too well.
But they're on the verge, Jason DeSanto, of spending $100 million, or at least that's what they're saying they're going to do.
Which is nothing compared to what she's spending.
No, but if you've got $100 million you're about to roll out, and based on what happened last night, maybe you don't put those commercials out.
Who, Donald?
Yeah, because those commercials you're about to put out don't really deal with the fact that you just blew up your campaign last night to some extent.
He hasn't done anything, and I think the big mistake he made last night, he's not done anything to appeal to people he needs to win. There's only 20% undecided right now. And women, millennials... suburban women, educated white folks that aren't voting for him that he needs, and he's not going to get with that performance.
Let me grab Aaron Katursky here real quick, then jump in with Jason DeSanto. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, was at Hofstra last night. What was the mood in the room?
Well, I think there's a good deal of excitement. The people were really anticipating this debate, and I think if you were a partisan or a supporter of either candidate, you came away fairly happy and frustrated both, because Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump each had their moments. They each took their licks, but it was not boring by any means. And the two of them maybe reinforced perceptions of the other rather than doing anything to sway voters to their side. For Donald Trump, he tried to cast Hillary Clinton as a thing of the past, the same old kind of politician. Hillary Clinton sought to portray Donald Trump as unfit and unpresidential. And I think he may have had the better first half. She may have had the better second half.
But Aaron, doesn't he have to move the needle, though?
Sure, they both do. The race is essentially tied. And so I think, sure, they both are trying to, as you say, move the needle and sway the undecided and those on the fence, or maybe even get a few from the other camp. But I'm not sure last night did it. But they have two more chances to try and prove they have the winning argument.
But the TV sense of this, and again, this goes back to all the way back to Nixon and Kennedy. The TV sense of this is the wheels came off for him at 45 minutes. Was there a feel of that in the room, or was it not quite as obvious if you were there?
Not sure it was terribly obvious. I mean, by the sheer force of personality, he was the dominant figure of the first half of the debate, and he was able to, I think, fairly skillfully interject, talk over, sigh, and interrupt when, and in little moments that may have put her, you know, kind of off guard, and she clearly was spoiling for a fight. She didn't shrink from Donald Trump, but he's so you know, ferocious. That you know, he did seem to overtake her at times, and yet in doing so, he went over some rather well-trod fibs. He you know, going through birthers and comments about women, and almost bragging that he didn't pay taxes because his tax money would have been squandered. I mean, I'm not sure how well that wears with voters who don't trust him to begin with.
Do you think this could have been a case? We're watching it on TV on a split screen, so Trump's face is on the whole time. And even when he's getting those digs, the goofy faces he's making, to me, really mitigated what he was trying to do. Maybe, were you getting a split screen, or were you just watching it in the room live?
Yeah, it's hard to know how a television audience gets it. I also try to listen for the radio audience, and I think, you know, you heard him. Because he was able to interject, or you could hear the audible sighs, or the nope, not true, nope, meh, you know, and some of that she let go unchecked. It does give you the impression, just to the ear, that he was the more dominant figure, and yet, you know, by the end, she seemed to have him on the ropes a couple of times, and you know, the couple of falsehoods that he repeated. And you know, that may not have been terribly, terribly well done.
All right, we'll let you roll, Aaron. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Aaron Kotursky, ABC News. Jason DeSantos here. It's interesting because you do go back to Kennedy, Nixon. Nixon won the radio debate. Kennedy won the TV debate.
It was the anniversary last night, too.
Hey, how about that? The vast majority of people saw it. They didn't hear it. But certainly for those who are listening, I hadn't thought about that from Aaron Kotursky's standpoint. But that does make sense that Trump would not be as offensive to those who were hearing it. He probably came out better and stronger.
Well, and to Pat's point about the split screen, and I go back to what I said earlier, I don't think it was the way Trump looked, except for right at the beginning, where I thought he looked odd, like he wasn't, maybe he was just socializing himself to the situation. But after that, he looked like Trump. And if you've seen Trump on TV a lot, he sort of, there was nothing that was particularly disarming about what he was doing. But the split screen with Clinton's reactions to him, to me, was the devastating part of it. And I'm thinking again about particular voter groups. She needed to connect. She needed to be warmer. She needed to be a little bit more likable in that way. And she did that while exposing him as being temperamentally unfit. And that is the key for voters that Pat just referenced, suburbanites, white college-educated voters in particular, that he is losing. That Mitt Romney won by 14 points and no Republican has lost in 60 years. He needed to expose her as being part of a rigged game while reassuring people that he was fit for the job. And if you ask yourself, did he reassure anybody that he was fit for the job? In the first 40 minutes where he was essentially himself but hit key issues like trade and like the economy, he did that. After the 45-minute mark, he got hit on taxes. He got hit on birtherism. He got hit with Clinton's comment about being prepared for president is a good thing, at which point he said the following. I have these notes, Steve. Cyber is tough. My son is amazing. Admirals kind of like me. That's my summary of five minutes of the argument. And then he started name-checking Sean Hannity. So if you were looking for reassurance, you kind of didn't get it in the second half of the debate, is only my point.
The notes are more frightening than what I saw. Pat Brady is here as well. Let me ask both of you. Did Hillary Clinton miss a moment last night when Trump said about his taxes? He admitted he didn't pay taxes, and he said, that makes me smart. Did she miss a moment by not stopping down and saying, are you saying on the record you didn't pay your taxes?
I think huge miss.
Because it's as good as revealing his taxes. It's as good as letting him out.
But she followed up strongly with what that means. and I think was very effective, but I think she could have really pinned his ears back with it.
I think Pat's right. She did a good job coming back around by saying, so that's $0 for schools, zero for vets, zero for troops. That made it more real. But yeah, I mean, in the moment, it probably would have been good to nail him down on that point. Yeah.
It cost him on the man of the people stuff, too, when he said, because I'm smart, so the rest of us are dumb that pay federal. Maybe we are, but when he said that, that's not the Make America Great crowd.
One of our texters just pointed out, too, Trump says NATO doesn't pay up, and yet he said he didn't pay his taxes. That's the whole double standard world he lives in.
Yeah, and he lives in it very comfortably. And
he'll part say of that's business.
Well, yeah, but that's part of the burden on a debater that I think Clinton handled well last night. You've got plenty of material over the past 18 months and many, many years before that about inconsistencies, about insults, about statements that make America more dangerous to our foes, and you have to just parse through those and be ready to point them out. And she did a good job of doing
and
that.
And she did that did not happen in the primaries where the bankruptcies, where she brought up the six bankruptcies, got somewhat specific, his nonsense argument about they're not personal. And she did that on several issues very effectively that they did not do in the primary. They just let it go. And I think that's why he never got frustrated, except the second debate in the primary, but got really frustrated when you point out that basically there's a lot of fraud in some of the stuff he says. Yeah. She was very good with that.
Yeah, the personal failures light him up like a Christmas tree. Can you guys hang for one more second?
Yes. Yeah.
If you can't, I'm sorry. You're hanging anyway.
I got Eric and
Lock
Kathy.
The doors. Eric and Kathy.
Eric and Kathy are giving away Miami Sound Machine tickets.
Oh, you got to get over there then. Stand by for that. Not the Eric and Kathy tickets, but for more of this.
The Steve Cochran Show.
The argument is that it's a form of racial profiling.
No, the argument is that we have to take the guns away from these people that have them and that are bad people that shouldn't have them. These are felons. These are people that are bad people. When you have 3,000 shootings in Chicago from January 1st, when you have 4,000 people killed in Chicago by guns from the beginning of the presidency of Barack Obama, his hometown, you have to have stop and frisk.
Your 2 minutes has expired, but I do want to follow up. Stop and frisk was ruled unconstitutional in New York because it largely singled out black and Hispanic young men.
No, you're wrong.
No, Donald, you're wrong. More on stop and frisk in Chicago in a second. First, 6-3-0 texter, what's the difference between Donald Trump and a puppy? A puppy will eventually stop whining and peeing on the floor. 815, am I the only one frustrated by Clinton's reactions while Trump was speaking? She had a stupid grin on her face the whole time and didn't appear to be as serious as I would hope she would be. Even when they were talking about her deleted email, she laughed and smiled. And then 630, what's happened to our wonderful country? How did such a ungrateful person become the Republican presidential candidate? Person who's never had to work paycheck to paycheck to make ends meet. I'm in that group and glad to be there. Just a couple of things from you guys. Text or line 312-981-7200. Pat Brady's here. Pat, where do you work?
Next Generation Strategies.
And Jason DeSanto, you employed?
More or less, yeah. I'm
a senior lecturer.
Northwestern Pritzker School of Law.
Yes, sir. The stop and frisk. Lester isn't wrong. There was direct profiling that had gone on with stop and frisk. It certainly had an impact on crime early, but it was ruled unconstitutional. I don't think we're going to be going to stop and frisk in Chicago.
That may be true. When I heard that exchange, though it was fact-free, I nonetheless felt like on that issue he had more or less fought to a draw, staying with a message of law and order.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought Clinton missed an opportunity at that point to pivot to the question of birtherism. That was the much larger and better point for her to make. And then not 3 minutes later, Lester Holt asked about it. And that really began the descent.
Started the fire. But there is a fair argument to be made that it's an argument to be made to President Obama. This is your hometown. You are going to be here. Is there something more you could do to stem the tide of violence on the West Side? I mean, that's a fair point to make, but it's not Hillary's problem at this point.
No, and I also suspect that for some people that claim has some resonance. But the larger question here was, who seems like they would deal with the question like an adult? I thought her answer was fine. I didn't think it was particularly great. I thought the much better ground for her to be on was shaming him on the question of birtherism. And what I thought she did well last night was picking the tone to use at various points with him. Humor, shame, moderated outrage. There's all kinds of ways you can, and ignoring him. And there's different levels.
If you turn the sound down, to me, it felt like, and everybody's been in this position, maybe it's a family reunion, maybe it's a dinner, where there's an older couple, and he answers all the questions, and he talks over her, and he's obnoxious, and she sort of smiles and is uncomfortable, and you always feel for her. So just based on texture, I think there's some points she won last night that cut through.
I didn't think she looked uncomfortable, though. I think at a certain point she looked like this might end up being kind of fun. And
Ms. Clinton, I'm going to have to talk to you about your definition of fun.
Yeah, and I have 500 tons of opposition research that I'm about to dump on your head.
Right. I'll give you a different perspective. I think that she needs to win that 20% that's in the middle that is undecided on either of these two. And there are a lot of people that look at Hillary Clinton, who is lecturing us in the city of Chicago on the crime problem. This is a woman who's lived in the bubble for the last 40 years, hasn't driven a car in 25 years. And when she gives that lectury tone to certain people, it's very grating and very irritating. And the point in politics, and I think where she failed last night, even though she kept a smile on her face, plastered on her face, and I think very much outsmarted Donald Trump, the likability factor with her is just not there for a lot of people. And that's what I think that she needed to do more of. I will give her credit, though, on the email thing for saying, I made a mistake and sticking with it. And I think that...
And he still is like a Joe DiMaggio streak of not apologizing. He still doesn't apologize for anything.
Yeah, but she still... She smiled, and I think there are some people, including me, that take the view the smile looks a little plastered. And the whole kind of rolling your eyes, well, that's why a lot of people don't like the know-it-all telling me what to do. That's why she's not likable. And the thing she's missing, again, I think she outsmarted him last night, is the likability factor.
Well, okay, there's one other voter group that also is at play. I don't think it was plastered on. I mean, that wasn't my...
I'm just telling you what some other
people
think.
No, and I get that. Yep. Because I've seen when it does look like that to me.
She didn't do the laugh thing.
No.
Fortunately.
But we have progressives. People who are thinking about voting for Gary Johnson, for example, people who liked Bernie, that's another pool of voters she has to appeal to and get them to see that it's a binary choice, that they cannot do anything to put Trump into the White House, and to the extent that she can expose him, make him look sillier, eviscerate him, I think that helps her with those voters. And so we might be thinking...
I agree, though, but if you're talking this late in the game, that's who you need to get behind you, there might be bigger problems.
But there will be some retrenchment by those people. They're not, I mean, not all of the 13...
Well, those are mostly young people.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. And those are the people that I think that performance would have spoken.
But the millennials that are Gary Johnson, William Weld's, will they come over to Hillary or will they not vote? In other words, if it gets down to November 8th and it looks like Gary Johnson, William Weld are not even a factor, Jill Stein's not a factor, will they choose not to vote?
She has to close the deal with them. She did not do that in one key way last night. She's a great tactical debater. Her individual issue answers are really good. They always have been. Where she struggles is to take those answers and funnel them up into one common story about her vote.
Exactly. And this is what we were talking about this yesterday. She's the least aspirational candidate I've ever seen.
Yeah, and if you're 18 years old, you want to, or 21 years old, you want to be aspirational.
Right. That shining city on the hill.
You want to feel like I got a future.
Yeah.
Or at the least, show why voting for you continues social progress.
Right.
Unity.
Yeah, but they're not supporting her right now because they don't believe the last 8 years have supported social progress. And I'm not dinging the president on that.
Oh, I think you're giving 21-year-olds far too much credit. Well, I don't think
whatever,
they're thinking
but
that
far. Well, I mean, is she going to go as far as, say, free college? I mean, that's not realistic, and she can't say that and be seriously considered as a presidential candidate. But where is the inspiration and her candidacy? That's what I've always wondered, why they haven't come up with a better theme other than the era with the light blue airplane.
I like airplanes.
I do, too, but it's just there's this doesn't fire you up.
We couldn't go and wrap this up with at least one text or comment on wardrobe. For 847, I hate to say it, but Hillary won the debate, and I did not support her, but I may now. I even took 50 points away from her for dressing in Star Trek cosplay. She still won.
I think...
I thought she looked lovely, and I thought he looked lovely.
Hey, can I ask Jason a question?
You got 30 seconds.
What about the podium? I thought she was at a disadvantage with the podium.
They adjusted the podium. They give her.
It still looked like it didn't fit. Was it good?
I thought the microphone was a little high
on
her. But the main thing in terms of the dynamics was 90-minute debate. There's an old adage that 60 minutes is the witching hour. That's when most mistakes occur in a debate, and that's really when he started to go downhill. For the town hall debate, totally new dynamic again for him. How do you deal in space with another candidate, and particularly a female candidate? So just when maybe he'll get up to speed with the idea of being in a debate, he better practice working in a town hall format.
Are they all 90 minutes?
Yes.
Okay. Nice to see you both.
Good to see
everybody
you, Steve.
Loves Raymond came on at 9. So
you flipped over?
Six minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Pat Brady, Next Generation Strategies, and if you're a freshman, a sophomore, or a junior, hopefully at some point Professor DeSanto will talk to you. But right now he's a senior lecturer.
God, you love that.
I kind of do.
Oh, man.
Good to see you, buddy.
It's good to see you, too.